Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, January 30th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Legislative Committee passes tax cut bill. Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls has a new version of the tax break for parents to pay for private and religious schools. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho House Revenue and Taxation Committee voted along party lines today to send a $253 million tax cut bill to the House floor. House Speaker Mike Moyle of Star introduced House Bill 40.
The last 6 years, the legislature has provided about $4.6 billion in tax relief. This year before this committee, we've proposed three different bills that propose an additional $400 million in tax relief. This is the first of the three. This one deals with income tax relief. Now, you've all looked at the bill. You know what it does. It lowers the income tax rates from 5.695 to 5.3. It allows our retired military members who are disabled to not be taxed on those disabled benefits. Right now, they're not taxed above age 62. This goes all the way down. It also allows our future hopeful military retirees to come to Idaho and be provided with the benefit that as long as they work, their retirements won't be taxed. And last but not least, it takes away the capital gains or the tax on gold bullion, monetarized metals. We're doing that because, quite frankly, we all know that nobody's paying taxes on it anyways. We can't track it. And we're also doing it because Idaho is a great state, which is rich in resources, and we want to encourage more of that kind of activity or commercial activity on those things here. As I sat and thought about this morning when I got up, I thought about what's happened in the past, right? All of you that know that every year I bring a tax relief bill. Those of you that know me know that the only reason I ran for the legislature is to cut taxes. This is probably the largest income tax relief we've ever provided or offered to the citizens of Idaho. But because I've had the opportunity to be in this building and provide proposed tax relief the last few years, one of the things I've noticed is it's kind of like deja vu, you know, Groundhog Day. I can tell you what's going to happen. The same thing happened the last 2 years that we've done tax relief. What's going to happen is you're going to hear proponents or opponents say, oh, you can't do it. We don't have the money. You're going to hear them say, you need to spend the money. It's more important for the governor to spend the money and not give it back to the taxpayers, right? You're going to hear that. You're going to hear the governor, the good gentleman on the second floor, say, oh, it doesn't fit within my budget. You're going to hear it. And I want to remind you something about that very specific issue. You constitutionally are in charge of the budget. You constitutionally are in charge of deciding whether this tax relief goes forward, not the good gentleman on the second floor. And I hope you remember that when we talk about this issue. You're going to hear that there's not enough money to provide for the needs, right? For example, schools. We're going to increase funding for schools. We always do, and we will again. You're going to hear about fire. We will take care of the fires. We always have, and we always will. You're going to hear about water. We'll take care of water. We always have, and we always will. But there is room to give back revenue to the taxpayers, and there is no reason we don't. If you look back 2 years ago when we provided the biggest property tax relief in Idaho history, if you remember, it was around $300 million. Remember that? We were told the same thing. You can't do it. You don't have the money. And in fact, the good gentleman on the second floor vetoed the bill. You overrode him, and it turned out to work out just fine. If you remember last year when we proposed income and property tax relief, you were told we don't have the money. Guess what? We provided the tax relief, and the money was there. The same thing is going to happen now. And I'm telling you that we have enough revenue to provide this $253 million in tax relief and more. I'll say one more thing about the fiscal note on this. The numbers came from the tax commission and what has happened in the history on fiscal notes on tax bills. We start the session, they say it's this number, and they're going to tell you it's more. And if it's more, thank God, the more the better.
That was Idaho House Speaker Mike Moyle speaking to the Idaho House Revenue and Taxation Committee today. The bill would reduce revenue by $253 million by reducing the individual and corporate income tax by 5.3%, eliminating the capital gains tax on metal bullion, and exempting military pensions from the income tax if the recipient is under the age of 62 and already employed. The Idaho Center for Fiscal Policy says House Bill 40 would reduce the state income tax by an average of $127 for households with incomes between $55,600 and $91,800. Those making between $31,100 and $55,600 would have a tax reduction of $64. The biggest benefit would be for households making between $146,000 and $286,000 per year. Their taxes would go down by $456 on average. Frank Birnbaum of the anti-education group, the Idaho Freedom Foundation, told the committee he thinks the loss of revenue to the state would be offset by the economic benefits of the tax cuts. A staffer read into the record written testimony from Zach Wilson of the Treasure Valley, who opposes House Bill 40.
I am providing this written testimony as although I live in the Treasure Valley, it is not practical for me to testify in person on all the bills I wish to provide testimony for, as I am a full-time employee. I strongly oppose two parts of House Bill 40. First, I oppose the reduction of the tax rate to 5.3 in Idaho Code Section 63-3024, subsection 2. I am concerned that with the number of other income tax credits and deduction bills that may be presented at this legislature is reducing the general fund too greatly. I'm very concerned that depleting the general fund may result in the inability to provide adequate services to the citizens of Idaho. There are schools in need of repair, and reducing the general fund eliminates necessary money to provide our children with quality education and facilities. In years past, the state of Idaho was in a difficult financial situation, and many state of Idaho employees were required to furlough. I would hate to see that happen to hardworking state workforce. Second, the addition of Idaho Code Section 63-3022, subsection V. To begin with, it is completely separate from Idaho's other capital gains deduction code section, which only allows a 60% reduction in reportable gain. I don't like the carve-out entirely excluding gains on one specific transaction type. I wonder what taxpayer this is truly meant to benefit. I fully support deductions for our retired military members. However, I think changes to Idaho Code Section 63-3022A, subsection D, should be made in a separate bill entirely and not be tied to other code changes in House Bill 40.
Democrats on the committee said the tax breaks will only benefit the wealthiest Idahoans while not doing anything for poor and middle-income Idahoans. Here's House Assistant Minority Leader Democrat Steve Birch of Boise.
I don't think it's prudent to move forward with this bill at this time. I believe it's premature to pass what has been called possibly the largest tax cut in the history of the state of Idaho until we have more information to make a fully informed decision. This bill cannot be viewed in isolation. It is part of a broader mosaic that doesn't make it clear that it can be justified given other factors. And there are three that I'd like this committee to consider. One is that it's part of a collection of accumulated reductions of over $400 million a year in this bill and other bills that have been introduced, and maybe even more. That's over $4 billion over the next 10 years to be taken from revenue. This bill is $253 million, $50 million for property tax relief, $50 million a year for grocery tax relief, $50 million a year in a parental choice school tax credit, and $20 million in TECM for roads. The second is, this state does need billions of dollars to meet future needs of a fast-growing and aging state. We know from ITD, from what they presented to the legislators in December, that they need at least around up to $200 million a year just for the projects to maintain roads and to replace bridges, and upwards to $5 billion over time for growth projects to handle growth. We have $1 billion in deferred and ignored school building maintenance that was documented in an OPE report that goes beyond what the previous bonds and levies have already been used to pay for. We're going to need, what I've heard, at least $80 million for a new state public defender system. And we need tens of millions of dollars for EMS services, coroner system, in-home care, and so forth. So we have the other side of the ledger. Yes, if you give government money, it'll spend it. The question is, these are the type of things that we know from the people closest to the work that needs to be done where we need revenue. The third concern is economic uncertainties. We don't have a revenue number and a budget yet to determine if we can, in fact, afford this bill. The future of the over $6 billion that we get from the federal government in the face of the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, and other executive orders, we don't know how that's going to impact the state of Idaho. That's a huge, can have a huge impact. And nothing in this bill prepares us for an eventual downturn in the economy. So, you know, past performance in past tax bills is no guarantee of future results, as they say in Wall Street. So it's hard to understand, quite frankly, how we can take over $250 million out of revenue for this state when at the same time we're borrowing $1 billion over 10 years for school facilities and paying millions of dollars in interest on it, taxpayer dollars paying that interest. And then finally, the question is, okay, it's a tax relief. For who? And in your packets, there's an analysis of this bill by the Idaho Center for Fiscal Policy that provides us the first look at actually who's getting what from this bill. And, you know, if you're making an income of between $55,000 and $92,000 a year, you're going to get an average benefit of $127. That's really not going to provide any kind of significant tax relief for the average Idaho family. Of course, if you're making over $280,000, you're going to get anywhere from $1,000 to $5,300. So there's a kind of a general inequity here. So, you know, what people are telling me when I talk to folks at the door is they want grocery tax repealed and they want property tax relief. No one is telling me they want income tax breaks. That's, in fact, when we handed out checks, when we gave back some of the surplus that we had, so-called surplus, most people told me at the door, you know, I wish the money had gone to my public schools.
That was Democratic Representative Steve Birch of Boise speaking in the Idaho House Revenue and Taxation Committee today. The committee voted on long party lines to advance Mike Moyle's tax break bill. It now heads to the House floor. Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls has introduced a new version of her bill that would send taxpayer money to private and religious schools through tax breaks for parents who have children in private schools or who homeschool. The House Revenue and Taxation Committee voted along party lines to introduce the new version of the bill today. The new bill still would award up to $50 million in tax credits for education costs in $5,000 per student increments. Horman said she adjusted her bill to add micro schools and learning pods as potential recipients of taxpayer money, and she created a requirement that non-public schools have a, quote, portfolio of evidence of learning record that indicates the student's growth. She also added a requirement that the state administer a parent satisfaction and engagement survey to recipients that the recipients would be required to fill out. The new version also specifies that students enrolled part-time or full-time in public or charter schools are not eligible for the credit. As with last week's bill, households whose incomes are below 300% of the federal poverty rate would be prioritized. The bill also requires the children of parents receiving the tax credits get instruction in English language arts, mathematics, science, and social studies. Opponents of the tax break system for students in private schools in other states say the program soon ballooned in cost, threatening funding for public school systems. Democratic Representative John Gannon of Boise referred to that during the introduction in the House Revenue and Taxation Committee today. Birch said, "We are setting up a system that is going to be unfair to some, not intentionally, but just work out so that some people are going to be able to take advantage of this and others are not. It just makes it hard to think that it's going to work out without some amendments or at least authorizing the tax commission to put in rules that would address some of this." University of Idaho President C. Scott Green told the legislature's Joint Finance Appropriations Committee on Monday the UI still wants to complete the purchase of the University of Phoenix, but the next move is up to the 85,000-student for-profit online university. Green said, "We're waiting to hear what they would like to do." Last year, the legislature blocked the $685 million deal, which put the potential sale into a wait-and-see pattern. The parties have until June 10th to close the agreement. During the JFAC meeting Monday, Lewis Clark State College President Cynthia Pemberton said staff salaries are a top priority for her. Pemberton asked lawmakers for $288,000 in additional discretionary funds for pay increases so the school can catch up a little bit. Pemberton said the college needs $1.2 million to bring salaries to median levels. In total, the state's four largest schools want $3.4 million in discretionary spending. The funds are known as operational capacity enhancements, which would be spent for employee salaries and benefits. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and
John's Alley Tavern, Moscow's home of live music. John's Alley is located at 114 East 6th Street in downtown Moscow.
The Trump administration has rescinded a Monday memo to freeze federal grants. A week of confusion over fiscal policy has left some groups uncertain about the future, including a Montana nonprofit. Montana Fair Housing offers services to help combat housing discrimination without charge, including education, dispute resolution, and enforcement-related activities. The work involves protections provided by the Federal Fair Housing Act, as amended in 1988, and the organization relies on federal funding, which Executive Director Pam Bean says could be threatened.
We would have to markedly cut back on services provided to residents in Montana. We could not provide the information and services we are currently doing at the level we are doing.
She says fair housing groups across the country were already unable to access their funding systems after the initial freeze, despite a judge's quick move to block it. Along with housing assistance, it's unclear whether the order will affect programs including Medicaid, Head Start, and free school meals. Following pandemic-era rapid population growth in the state, Montana has a deficit of nearly 17,000 affordable and available rental units for people with extremely low incomes, according to the Montana Budget and Policy Center. Bean says that amplifies some systemic housing problems.
With the shortage of housing, the incidence of discrimination increases because housing providers can be more, quote, selective, end quote, about who they're choosing for tenancy.
Bean says Montana Fair Housing assists about 1,900 households and housing providers each year. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
Democratic U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington said she considers President Trump's reversal of most of his executive orders freezing federal grants and loans a victory for the people. Senator Murray said, "This is an important victory for the American people whose voices were heard after massive pressure from every corner of this country. Real people made a difference by speaking out. Still, the Trump administration, through a combination of sheer incompetence, cruel intentions, and a willful disregard of the law caused real harm and chaos for millions over the span of 48 hours, which is still going on. Trump intended his order to place a freeze on money going out while officials looked for evidence of programs not aligned with the Trump administration's directives. A memo issued by the Office of Management and Budget said that would include programs that had elements of Marxist equity, transgenderism, and Green New Deal social engineering policies. The Idaho Education News reported due to the wording of Trump's executive order, multiple states reported Head Start payments portals were frozen Tuesday morning, preventing preschool providers from accessing money needed for daily operations. Medicaid and Medicare internet portals were unavailable in all 50 states Monday afternoon through Tuesday morning. There was widespread confusion, causing several states and organizations to file lawsuits against the Trump administration and causing a federal district judge to call a temporary halt to the freeze Tuesday evening. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt blamed the confusion on the courts and news outlets and not the Trump administration. Speaking of Trump's reversal, which occurred yesterday, Leavitt said this action should effectively end the court case and allow the government to focus on enforcing the president's orders on controlling federal spending. In his new order Wednesday, Trump said he is only freezing spending for diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and Green New Deal environmental policies, and not the entitlement programs such as Medicaid, Medicare, and SNAP that he believes people depend on. The University of Idaho and Idaho National Laboratory have announced a strengthened collaborative effort on projects advancing nuclear energy innovation, protecting national security, and building a resilient and low-carbon energy future through a new five-year partnership agreement. The institution signed what is called the Strategic Understanding for Premier Education and Research, which they say will expand on more than 75 years of collaboration advancing safe, efficient, and sustainable nuclear energy use. The agreement focuses on nuclear materials, fuel cycle engineering, integrated energy systems, and cybersecurity for power grids. University of Idaho President C. Scott Green said the university has a proud 80-year tradition of partnership with Idaho National Laboratory, and quote, "The agreement and the work it will drive push the boundaries of science and engineering while providing tangible and sustainable energy solutions for our state." The University of Idaho reports the agreement's key initiatives include co-leading the newly launched Idaho Energy Initiative, which is a hub for research, education, and workforce development to address energy challenges. The so-called super agreement is expected to lead to the development of the Intermountain West Nuclear Energy Corridor through the Idaho Advanced Energy Consortium. The designated technology hub is expected to secure up to $75 million in federal funding to advance nuclear reactor deployment, strengthen supply chains, support workforce growth, and fuel support for the domestic nuclear industry. Other initiatives include advancing nuclear fuel technologies, molten salt reactors, and fuel recycling programs. The University of Idaho established its nuclear engineering program in 1954 in partnership with the Idaho National Laboratory, which is headquartered outside of Idaho Falls.
People who receive food benefits through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program will no longer be reimbursed if their benefits are stolen. Sarah Weber Ogden with Partners for Hunger Free Oregon says losing these protections will harm Oregon families. She says skimming, when a device on a card reader steals personal information, is the main way benefits are stolen. Ogden emphasizes that even though rates of skimming are very low, it can be devastating to victims.
I don't think that people who haven't experienced it really understand what it's like to suddenly find out you don't have any money for food. It really is just a feeling of absolute helplessness.
President Joe Biden signed the protection into law in 2022 as part of the Farm Bill, but it was excluded from the latest version signed last year. Ogden says when protections like this end on a federal level, it places the burden on the state to pick up the tab. Currently, nearly 700,000 Oregonians, or one in six, receive SNAP benefits. Ogden adds since the Farm Bill has been extended, the door is still open to push for a more inclusive SNAP and other nutrition programs. More than half of SNAP participants in Oregon are families with children, and Ogden says ending the theft reimbursement program is taking a step backwards.
We remember how bad it was for families before before the replacement benefits program was available.
Ogden says if you have had benefits stolen before December 20th, you may be able to get them replaced if you act quickly. She adds that you can protect yourself from theft by blocking out-of-state and online spending, freezing your card between uses, and changing your PIN regularly. Ogden says if you need help finding food, you can visit foodfinder.oregonfoodbank.org to locate free groceries or meals near you. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
That's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast, the National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory for the Washington and Idaho Palouse and the Coeur d'Alene and Spokane areas for tomorrow, Friday, 4 a.m. till 1 p.m. Total snow accumulations up to 2 inches, snow expected. Plan on slippery road conditions. The conditions could impact the Friday morning commute. Slow down and use caution while traveling. Forecast for the Moscow Pullman area is calling for slight chance of snow tonight. Otherwise, cloudy, low 32. Tomorrow, 90% chance of precipitation, snow before noon, then rain, snow level rising to 4,500 feet in the afternoon, high 39, southeast winds 10, gusts up to 20, new snow accumulation less than 1 inch. Friday night, 90% chance of precipitation, rain before 4 a.m., then snow possibly mixed with rain, snow level 4,100 feet, steady temperature around 37, breezy, southwest winds 15 to 20 with gusts up to 30. Little or no snow accumulation expected. On Saturday, 80% chance of precipitation. Snow possibly mixed with rain, becoming all snow after 7 a.m. High 35, breezy, southwest winds 15 to 20, gusts up to 35. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. Saturday night, 50% chance of snow, mainly before 10 p.m., mostly cloudy, low 21. Southwest winds 10, gusts up to 25, up to a half inch of snow possible. 40% chance of snow showers Sunday, partly sunny, high 33. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. Current temperature is 36. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know that your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ, and there's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox and Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is up next, followed by appearing locally at 7:30, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. At 8 o'clock, under construction. At 9:30, music in earnest with the Academy and the Not Dark Yet show. Recorded jam band concerts on 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. with The Ride. Stay tuned for more music, entertainment, and information throughout your evening here at KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored by Spectrum 2 Art and Dance Studios, specializing in art and dance classes for child
through adult. 525 South Main Street in Moscow. Information at 208-882-1445, UBU Dance Guru at msn.com, or spectrum2studio.com. For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.